Nazi troops, under the command of Major Krupp, moved into the swamps in search of Roxanne and the missing goddess Eva Braun. Von Reisling's orders had been clear and succinct. Not a man should emerge from those hellish bogs unless they had the two Americans in tow. Otherwise, they would wish they had stayed. The troops had to leave all their heavy equipment behind as they entered the bog. Major Krupp wore protective body armor, unlike his troops, and he carried a rapid-fire gas ejection Sten gun. He wanted to be as careful as possible. There had been rumors of cannibals, and worse.
Ugh. A boat would have been useful.
The Major suddenly had the feeling of being watched. He glanced nervously around, but could see nothing beyond the endless vines and high green stalks that grew out of the slime.
Calm down. Don't get jittery now.
Another group of Nazi troops, led by Lieutenant Himmler, edged along a narrow trail between mangrove trees.
Keep close, men! What was that? Must have been my imagination. Move out, men!
Lieutenant Himmler? Could there be something living out here in the storm?
Don't be ridiculous. There couldn't possibly be. Who's there? Klaus? Klaus? Everybody halt! Defensive positions! Keep an eye out. If anything moves, shoot it. Could be Klaus fell into a pit. Yes, he must have drowned, the poor fool. All right, men, move out.
Slowly, without any of them noticing, giant green hands ripped out of the fog, pulling stragglers back with them. One by one, they were taken, until there was just Himmler left.
Why is nobody moving? Anybody? Is anybody out there? No. I've got to get out of here.
What was that?
Count off, men! I want to make sure no one's lost in these quicksand bogs.
Ball here!
Klaus here!
Well, what about the rest of you? Come on now. This is no time for foolishness. What is the matter? Where are you? Where are you? I don't like this. Not one bit.
Crap! Ball's gone! The swamp just rushed up and covered him!
Impossible! Come on, whatever you are! I fought the Moabir! I fought the Kurds! I've been all over this godforsaken planet! And I'm not about to be killed by a fucking swamp! Klaus! My God! Why did you fall? Where are you, cannibals? Beheading my colonel!
Blood poured from Krupp's arm stump and his neck. Somehow, it took Krupp nearly 20 seconds to die. Just enough time to fully experience being eaten alive.
Not bad. You want some?
No.
No.
Suit yourself. These Nazis are the best things I've eaten in months.
Nitrogen chewed up an arm, which disappeared down the throat, hand last, waving goodbye. There were dead Germans everywhere, being eaten, hanging in trees upside down, being cooked over fires, and smoked for storage and future eating. Myriad fires burned around the island as the Narga cooked their prey. When they had finished, Nitrogen Carnivore leaned back and lay on his back against a tree, a huge, sopping mass squishing halfway around the lower bark.
I suppose we owe you that meal, Roxanne, since these troops came to get you.
My pleasure. And now I have a favor to ask of you.
What would that be? Your lives? I told you we would return you to shore tomorrow.
I want you to help us. I left a lot of men back there. Men like yourself. Like you used to be anyway. Slaves beaten and destroyed by the Nazis until they're consumed and turned into lifeless shells. You know the story better than I do. They helped me back there, and I promised them I would return. With your help, and the help of your people, we could wipe out the German base completely. You could help the living keep them from joining you.
You don't know, Roxanne. These creatures around me, they don't think like men. You and I, we are civilized. At least, our minds are. But they, and even the other leaders, I don't think they would.
Would you? Would you help?
Yes. I'll help, Roxanne. Revenge. Yes, I could use some revenge. My soul is twisted. Inside are forces that want to destroy, to kill everything. It is hard to control. Perhaps by at least directing it against the right enemy, my people and our dark natures and energies can be focused on a good cause. Yes, I will help. But the others, I don't know.
The entire island was filled with the hulking green monstrosities lying around, exhausted from their feast. They hadn't eaten this much since the munitions explosion a month earlier. And those bodies had already been burnt and torn. Their huge burning pumpkin red eyes closed in sleepy satisfaction. They rested for an hour or so, and then rose and walked over to the shrine for their nightly rituals. From across the clearing where Roxanne sat, his arm around a sleeping Rona, he watched the ritual. Rock could dimly pick up the thoughts of helping him, of fighting the Germans. A debate seemed to rage between groups of them, but as the ceremony came to a close, the Narga seemed to stop arguing. Nitrogen Carnivore walked over to the Doomsday Warrior.
We'll go. I can't tell you they want to do it for the good of mankind. But because they've grown to like the taste of fresh Germans. Besides, maybe, if we're lucky, some of us will die. That is our greatest dream, Roxanne. To be given the gift of eternal death. Perhaps this time, it will be for me.
Go faster! We got a lot of bodies to dump.
We're going as fast as we can.
Well, it's not fast enough. What was that? Everybody stop.
Fuck this!
You're right, Roxanne. That was fun.
Roxanne and Rona's raft hit solid ground, and as they jumped out, Rona let her stomach relax. She was beginning to think she was never going to see land again.
It's a shame we couldn't eat those men.
Trust me, the more slaves you set free, the more Nazis there will be for you all to eat. None of them are food.
Very well. The Germans are far tastier anyway. And fatter. Which way, Roxanne?
Straight through that fence there, about a mile off, and then into the fort. I don't think with a backup team like you guys, we really need much of a plan.
The elephant-sized creatures spread out in a long line. Rock walked in front, feeling a deep satisfaction in his return. They would see he hadn't broken his word. He just prayed there were some left to save. They came to the first gate blocking the garbage collection site.
Let me handle this.
All yours.
The Narga followed behind Roxanne as he ran down the two-lane dirt road that led to the fort. The lights of Geringrad twinkled desperately in the black night ahead.
Ugh. This is so boring.
I agree. It is one thing to carry out the Führer's grand plan, another thing entirely to stand guard at an impregnable fortress. I wish something would happen that would prove our strength.
Something where we are up against impossible odds, where we have to snatch life from the jaws of danger.
Something to impress my girlfriend with. back home, yeah? That good, no? You said that would be good, no? Dida!
Look behind you!
What is... Oh my god!
The things were almost upon them. Impossible, nightmarish creatures with reaching, dripping arms of sludge and mouths open to consume, bottomless teeth of black fungus. One of the Naga lifted a German. He squeezed it hard. Couldn't hope to outrun the swamp beings. One lumbered behind him and absent-mindedly snatched him up.
No! No! Nein! Oh, please! Please, no!
It opened its mouth wide, trying to decide whether to start on the brain or the inner organ. It chose the latter.
Delicious.
Come on. The main gate's up ahead. If we go fast, we'll be able to get inside before the alarms go off. You get rid of the Nazis, I'll get the slaves out.
They ran for the electrified main defense gate, and Rock stopped just in front of it. He turned to the leader of the Narga.
Nitrogen, if I ever see you again, thank you. Your people will be written as one of the groups that contributed to this country's freedom.
It is my pleasure, Roxon. It has been good to know you. I have learned from you. Even in our wretched states, one exists, and knowledge, seeing more, taking in the things around us, there is nothing else, at least for me.
I hope you get your wish for peace.
It is not in our hands.
The huge thing turned with astounding grace, considering its mass, and reached for the gate. The Narga walked into Fort Geringrod, bent on nothing less than annihilation. They came up to the first few buildings at the edge of the fortress and smashed through the concrete walls as if they were made of paper. The sleeping guards inside woke to find themselves enveloped in steel arms of slime. The Narga went wild, thrashing their arms, slamming out at everything in sight. They had never been able to use their full strength and let loose with everything they had. They had bottled up all the murderous hatred and twisted madness that lay inside them, and that had added to the festering poison and decay of their souls. But now they could let it all come out. Now they could kill, and kill again. The Germans didn't know what hit them. Everywhere, the Narga burst through walls, windows, smashed down gates, grabbed every German they found, ripped out their throats with a single quick bite, and then threw the bodies to the ground, mentally noting where they had left them for future collection. The barracks of the German officers was left in a sea of blood, which ran out the door and into the street, fingers and eyeballs floating in its rushing streams. Those that didn't die instantly wished they had when they came face to face with one of the creatures and saw what was about to consume them. It was as if a tornado, 100 tornadoes were going through it, wrecking, obliterating everything they touched, turning buildings to dust, bodies to blood. The Narga feasted, and the Germans died. They had built this city, and it would be their tomb. Roxon rushed through the demolished gate and toward the slave section of the city. He and Rona had rearmed themselves with the weapons of the first killed Germans, a submachine gun each, German Lugers, and a few potato mashers. They tore ass down the main thoroughfare as the Narga wreaked their hellish destruction all around. Rock didn't even know what the slaves would do once they were freed. Most of them were already withered away to nothing, but he'd have to try. And so would they, because they weren't going to have any choice about it. He came upon the first of the barracks.
Listen up! It's time to go, boys. Name's Ted Roxon. You may or may not have heard of me, but I'm here to free your fucking asses whether you want to or not. You, to put it bluntly, no longer have a master. The Nazis are retiring from the slave business as of tonight. Get out of here. Run into the hills, the mountains. You're on your own now. It It's up to you, live or die. As men, we're beasts.
He turned as the amazed eyes stared up at him speechlessly. Roxen went through every slave barracks from A through G, telling the inhabitants the same thing. Not accustomed to thinking for themselves, they milled around in confusion and out into the streets, not really wanting to leave the fortress. That is, until they saw the first lines of the Narga coming nearer. They trampled each other, heading the other way. Rock grew increasingly nervous as he reached his old barracks. Had they all died, left there in the basement?
It's him! He's returned! See? See? I told you! The Roxen has returned!
Windbinder! They didn't kill all of you when I left.
No, they needed us too bad. We were whipped and had electric shock to But other than the 12 men who died down in the basement and, of course, Lyons, whom they took away, they just sent us back to work.
And Lyons, what happened to him?
They took him to the House of Pain. He's been the screamer this week. Here's all the screams we must work to. They're broadcast all day.
Shit.
It's time for you to go. You're all free now.
Where are you going, Roxen?
I'm gonna break him out.
Roxen rushed toward the pain center in the central square, the place where uncooperative prisoners were taken for treatment or disposal. He turned a corner to the building with his sub by his side. Rona, running a step behind, her long red hair tied back with twine in a thick ponytail, her right hand holding a grenade, pin pulled, ready for quick release. The three guards at the front entrance to the cylindrical tower where Rona had spent her time as a goddess in residence on the 10th floor didn't have a chance.
Come on!
Whoa! Which way to the...
Follow me! It's on the next floor up. Sometimes, at night, I heard the screams myself. Here's the door! Locked.
Step back. Key coming up. Unlocked.
Good shot, Rock. There was a guy behind it.
I know.
Together, they rushed down a hallway of padded rooms, each filled with humans, or the remains of those that the SS had had their way with. In the seventh small cubicle, they found Lyons.
Oh, Jesus!
Lyons' face was bashed in, teeth missing, one eye swollen as large as a black egg. Then, he smiled up at them.
You came back, Roxen. They told me, the SS, that you had betrayed me. That, as miserable as my life was, you had made it even worse and had lied and deserted us all. I told them no, and even in the midst of what they did to me, the knowledge that you were coming, that got me through it. A man needs something to believe in, or else there is nothing.
I came back. Look, I want you to know that I didn't try to escape from the basement when you were all trapped. Rona fell onto the tube car and I jumped on to help her. The thing took off. There was no time.
Yes, it's okay, Roxen. I believe you.
We're gonna fix you up now, pal. You're coming with us, Rona and me, back to Century City. I can see a man of your courage and intelligence would be of great use to us there.
Thanks, Roxen, but I think I'm dying, so why don't you two just...
You're not dying. Believe me, I've seen dying, and you're not it.
Rock looked him over. No large puncture wounds, though there were cigarette burns across his chest. Hopefully, he had just been tortured and not mortally wounded. The Nazis would have wanted to drag it out.
Take my hand. Can you walk?
Yes, I think I can, but not too fast.
He held himself stiffly erect. Reborn from being a slave into being a man, at least partially, through Roxen's words, he didn't want to give up his dignity now. He walked shakily down the corridor, his body twitching with exquisite pain, but his eyes clear and strong. Roxen pulled out a Luger from his belt and handed it to Lyons, who took it in trembling hands. It seemed symbolic of his emancipation, a material object that marked a metaphysical transition from savage to human. They came out onto the main floor corridor and walked smack into nearly a dozen Nazi stormtroopers. Standing in front of them, holding the inevitable Luger that Hitler had done so much to popularize, was von Reisling, his face bright red with rage, his one good eye bloodshot and wide, as if it were about to burst from its socket.
You, and you, my queen, we gave you the ultimate honor, The perfect archetype of Aryan womanhood. A goddess to be worshipped by every proud soldier of the fatherland. And you threw it all away.
You've got to be kidding.
I've got lions.
My fine Ubenfuhrer. I had no intention of ever being your goddess. Besides, you're a dickless wonder anyway. No goddess could ever be satisfied with an ugly, effeminate, impotent Nazi pig like you, von Reisling.
She figured one of the insults would cause a fuse to blow. And it did. Von Reisling's face grew even brighter, almost the color of his pulsing blood, and she saw his chest inhale to scream out the command to fire. Almost the color of his pulsing blood, and she saw his chest inhale to scream out the command to fire. He should have screamed it faster. Roxanne shoved lions to the floor. Six men fell, gushing blood and jagged deep wounds in their legs and backs. But they had shielded the others, whose guns were already on hand. Rona took cover, Rock and lions following close behind.
Shit! Reinforcements from the upper floors. Any more grenades?
Not a one. And I can see... not looking good for us. Rock!
I'm okay. It went through the shoulder.
Rock brought his hand back from the wound. It came back, sopping wet.
Rock! I just want to tell you that...
Hold that thought, Rona. We're not done yet. Nitrogen, we could use a little help here.
Methane is on his way.
We're getting some backup in just a moment. Lions, you okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm just getting shot at by half a squadron of Nazis.
It won't be long before we...
Methane had knocked over an entire wall. Terrified Nazis turned their guns on him, but the bullets simply buried themselves in his gelatinous mass. His arms extended to 10, 20 feet as he grabbed soldiers from the staircases. Nazis were left where they dropped, and the being moved so fast through the hall that some bullets hit German hearts and lungs. Methane lashed out at the staircase itself. The creature tossed masses of noxious decay, drowning men instantly. Chemicals hit soldiers that rotted their skin, that melted their clothes, that made their eyes and noses bleed thick red. Large chunks of decay fell and acted seemingly of their own accord, jumping upon men and tearing them apart. Almost as quickly as it began, it was over. Roxanne and Rona stood up slowly, and Lyons remained on the floor, his arms over his head.
Methane, thank you.
Methane Death came up in front of Roxanne, who was standing between the creature and Lyons.
Can I eat him?
No, he's with me.
Ah, well, there is plenty of meat to eat.
Lenarga turned and headed out in search of more goodies. Rona kneeled down and tore off the swastika from von Reisling's bloody uniform. The three free fighters walked over the headless German bodies that littered the hall and out into the street. The fortress was in ruins. Half-eaten corpses lay everywhere, appendages strewn around like a parts shop. Countless fires lapped their licking flames into the air. Towering funnels of smoke joined together, creating a vast black shroud high over the fortress. The Narga had the destructive powers of an atomic bomb, leaving nothing untouched in their path. The Nazi invasion force, the Fourth Reich, destined to last 10,000 years, met its violent destiny, taken by creatures that they themselves had wrought. The swamp mutations spent nearly 2 days inside the fortress city of Geringrad, or what was left of it, munching on the leftovers of their deceased enemy. They ate everything, from the factory guards to the few remaining men patrolling the bazaar. They ground down the very bones that lay in the streets, sucking out the marrow like old dogs. Then they left, heading back to the swamps, to their world of eternal green hell. The slaves of the fortress had exited post-haste from the burning death camp and ran into the hills. Their rescue had happened so fast, and now they were on their own. They split up into smaller groups, anywhere from 4 to 20 trying to clumsily hunt, make fires, keep warm. Windbinder had promised to track down Yigmar and his slavers and make them pay for their greed. Roxanne knew that in the next 6 months, half of the freed slaves would die, but the other half would live and would be made tough fighters. They would be ready to strike back at those who had forced them into chains. Yigmar and his brethren wouldn't stand a chance. After stocking up on supplies, Roxanne, Rona, and Lyons made their way slowly through the Rockies back towards Century City, over 150 miles away, moving at night and in the early dawn, and resting during the day in the shade so as to avoid any Russian drones. Lyons seemed very tired the first 2 days, and Rock didn't want to push him too hard. He had grown to like something in the feisty, humorous nature of the teenager. The three of them hit it off, and Lyons, once he realized that he wasn't going to die, left the two free fighters in stitches with his stories of his early life, traveling with his father, who was a salesman, selling everything from nails to snake oil, ammunition to corsets, magic spells, love potions, and positive, absolute triple-your-money-back, money-making amulets. They had crisscrossed the U.S. twice a year, working their way all the way down to Texas and as far north as Canada, all in a beat-up old horse-drawn wagon.
The wagon kept going. It was the horses that dropped. Dad used to drive them so hard, always claiming they was just lazy sons of bitches. Ain't nothing lazier than a horse, he used to tell me. Man's got to make them work, earn the oats. And damned if he wouldn't push them all day and night just to get to the next town where they'd be having some kind of fair or something. And the damn thing would inevitably drop over like some big old tree hit by lightning right in the middle of the road. And Dad would jump out and start kicking and screaming at that horse, claiming it was just being lazy. I'd say, "Dad, the damn thing's dead." And he'd say, "No, he ain't. Just being lazy. Being dead is the laziest trick they got." I saw a lot of this country, before the Reds caught up, that is. Said Dad was a spy because they found binoculars and cameras in the wagon. Shot him right on the spot, right in front of me. They took me off to the labor camps. And there I've been, for nearly 5 years now. Passed from one damn Red Fort to another like a piece of cattle till you kicked some sense into my goddamn head. Being in those camps, at first you resist, you know? But day after day, they smash you, kick you, piss on you, don't give you any food, even water. They make you become a slave, Rock. Mold you like clay over and over and over. And then one day, your mind is just gone, you know? I can remember the first few camps I was in, the guards who beat me, the work we did. But after that, it's just a blur, like this mist that hurts to even touch.
By the third day, they were all enjoying the mountain trek. Lyons seemed completely recovered now, jumping around like a young buck, running circles around Rona and Roxanne. He was slowly coming to life, and it warmed both their hearts to see it. Up there in the thick forests of Colorado, it felt as if all the world were all right. A paradise compared to so much of America. Birds circling above chirped out their songs. Deer and small game scampered around the woods, hardly afraid of humans, since they hadn't seen any in so long. Rock showed Lyons how to track and hunt. That evening, as the sun set, Rona built a small fire out of kumak tree branches, a new breed of oak that burned with hardly any smoke. The woods in this part of the Rockies were abundant with the sweet-smelling species. Rock led the teenager through the woods, showing him how to walk Indian style, so as not to make noise, to keep downwind, to spot tracks, droppings. The youth took it all in with great interest.
"There, to the right, 90 feet. You see? It looks just like part of the bushes, right? A shadow."
"Yeah, I see it. Yeah. A deer or something."
"Schechter calls them chameleon deers. They're able to change their color to match any surrounding they're in seconds. There, it's moving."
The two men watched as the medium-sized male mountain deer walked from a dark patch to an open space lit up with red streaks from the sun. Instantly, the creature's hide turned a blazing red, as if it were just a patch of light from the brilliant sunset.
"Now, sight up on the chest. Don't try for a headshot, at least not with a rifle like this. The chest, lower part. Now squeeze."
They walked over, and Rock leaned down to look at the bullet holes.
Perfect shot.
The Doomsday Warrior took out a razor-sharp, short-bladed bayonet he had snatched from the Nazi camp on the way out, and showed Lyons how to butcher the deer, skin it where the best meat was. Within minutes, they had 20 pounds of thick steaks, all sliced and piled, and Roxon was wrapping them in the thick leaves of the oak trees, tying the whole package with some of the thin vines that hung down around them.
There, dinner for... What's wrong?
Behind you.
A grizzly, perhaps 16 feet tall, stood high on its hind legs, sniffing the air with a twitching nose. It looked down at Roxon from what seemed like the sky. That almost made him black out, but he held on and reached for the knife he had put back in its sheath. The bear pulled its head up, looking down at him from just feet away, opening its jaws and starting down.
A little help.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Rock, are you okay?
Yeah, I think so. You pull me out and I'll tell you for sure.
Between the two of them, they managed to finally roll the dead weight off Roxon, and he crawled out to stand up. He looked down at the thing. Its entire upper skull had been blasted to bits, the brain sitting in a bloody pool in the lower skull cavity.
You know, I think you just saved my ass.
Yeah. I know you said not to go for the headshot, but I figured I was close enough not to miss. I put the muzzle right up to its ear and just emptied the clip. I did good, huh, Roxon?
Yeah, you did good. Century City should be just over this peak.
Seriously? Because I don't think I can stand another mountain.
It's right up over this peak, I promise.
You ready to see it, Lyons? Well, here it is. Oh my God!
What is it? Oh no.
Roxon's eyes narrowed with a sharp pain. Carson Peak was completely reshaped, much of its pine trees and plant life burned to ash. Instead of a lofty snow-covered peak in front of them, there was just a misshapen double hump of a much lower mountain, at least 300 feet shorter than their previous harboring peak.
A nuke.
I can't believe it. I just can't believe it.
There could be survivors who were in the lower levels. Let's circle around to the other side, to one of the emergency entrances.
They spent nearly an hour and a half circling around the wide mountain until they came to a grove of bent and twisted pines, but at least not burned to ashes. The brunt of the blast had clearly been borne by the opposite slope.
There should be an opening here. Where is it?
Hold up. I feel a breeze.
Where, Rock?
Right here. Come on, we've got to dig.
Rock found a piece of twisted metal on the ground nearby and used it as a makeshift shovel, digging away at the obstruction. Rona and Lyons joined in, and the three of them scooped frantically away at the silt and stone from where they remembered the western entrance to be. After 3 hours of painstaking, back-breaking work, they at least managed to channel out a small entranceway through the bomb-created debris. Rock squeezed through, instantly covered with layers of black, clinging silt. He crawled 30 feet.
What do you see?
There's a door down here, but it's locked with a padlock. Lyons!
Yeah, Rock?
Pass me that Turgenev you stole.
Coming down, Rock.
Thanks.
What's inside?
Darkness. Come on down, guys.
The three walked inside, Lyons by Rock's side with a flashlight. A long, winding tunnel extended off into the distance, the walls still raw rock. The three of them were barely able to fit into the narrow space of the ancient entranceway.
Anyone here?
Are they all dead?
Don't even think it, Rona. This is an old tunnel, hasn't been used for eons. It could well be sealed at the other end. If it is, we'll just have to blast our way through that too. Then, only then, we'll know for sure.
Roxon's words were quickly borne out as they came to the sealed end of the stone path.
Another door, and it's not locked by a padlock this time.
How are we getting through?
Hey, Rona, how many grenades did you get from Garengrod before we left?
Oh, I don't know. 6?
That many? I think two should do.
I'm gonna pull the pins on three, all right? Take cover now. One, two, three!
Yeah, that worked. Come on, let's head in.
Keep your guns at the ready, men.
Hey! Did you hear that? A voice!
Hello!
Who goes there?
It's us, Roxanne and Rona.
From out of the swirling cloud of black soot, five figures emerged, Liberator automatic rifles pointed straight at the filthy Free Fighters. Rock recognized the wavy red hair of Shannon, Wrath's right hand.
Roxanne!
My God! Roxanne, you're alive! We'd given up hope!
Wrath, you're still alive. What the hell happened here? We could see that a nuke was dropped. How many are still alive? Is the city still functioning?
Easy, easy. The bomb went off, and thank God it was a low-yield neutron device, about 1,000 feet above Carson Mountain. From what we can figure out, it was a fluke. The technicians showed up at the last second here, just when some of Kilov's bomber fleet were about to saturate this whole section of the Rockies with N-bombs. The tech's black beam weapons took out the bombers, but not before one released its load. It could have been worse. A lot worse. At least we're still here.
How many casualties?
Well, so far we've lost 890, and rising. More radiation got through than we had originally thought.
Dr. Schechter, my team.
Schechter's alive, but he's laid up for a while from the wounds he received at the Battle of Forster Valley. Chen's unhurt, and McCaughlin's recovered from his gunshot wound. Detroit and Archer are both a little under the weather. Radiation sickness, I'm afraid. But we're treating everyone with the science team's deradiation equipment, and it looks good. That's all I know.
What's the situation of Century City itself?
We've been working like hell to shore up the most heavily damaged parts. Sections A through H are completely destroyed. But the rest of the city, though it's not too pretty, is functional. Our main problem right now is that everything's on secondary auxiliary power. The entire city is being run by just three gas-powered generators. That's why there are no lights anywhere in these lower sections. Our main power units from the thermal generators under Ice Mountain have been damaged. We were just preparing to send a repair team down into the steam tunnels to see what the hell happened. But right now, in all honesty, I don't know what the situation is.
Well, we're here and happy to help. Oh, by the way, let me introduce the newest Free Fighter to join CC's ranks. John Lyons.
Aye.
Rock, you know we can never allow new men in here unless they've been totally screened, given lie detector tests and all the rest of our psychological testing. Now, more than ever, we can't afford to have any red agents in here.
Hey, I'll let you know.
I'll stake my life on this man. If you knew what he's been through, you wouldn't have any questions.
Wrath looked skeptical, but didn't challenge Roxanne. He'd make his own checks, even if they had to be done covertly, to make sure the kid was who he claimed to be. They walked out of one of the city's lowest levels and up the sloping ramps that led to the living and factory sections. The underground world, which Roxanne had come to know and love over the last 20 years, was now a foreign, eerie place, filled with rubble, clogging its underground walkways, lit only by greenish, dim emergency lights. The last time Roxanne had been in the main square, it was in celebration of his return from Moscow. But now, it felt like visiting a past life.
What the hell happened to both of you anyway?
It's a long, long story. I'll tell you some other time when we can sit around with a few drinks and laugh about it. Right now, I'm not in a laughing mood.
Wrath stepped over to a figure digging out crates of rifles that had been completely covered with debris, and tapped him on the shoulder.
Hey, big guy. I have some people I want you to meet.
No time, Wrath. I knew it! I knew you weren't dead, Rocky boy! Chen, Detroit, look who's come to pay us a visit!
Two other men nearby stood up, and their grim faces instantly brightened into huge smiles.
Ha ha! Well, as I live and breathe!
Detroit jumped up, slammed his arm around Rock's neck, and ran his fingers through Rona's hair. Chen stood up and walked silently over to his closest friend.
I hate to say it, but I thought you'd bought it this time. Detroit kept saying no, but I had a sick feeling in my gut. I couldn't feel your mind out there, anywhere, even in my deepest meditations.
I didn't have a mind for a while, pal. Maybe that's why.
The two men embraced, and for the first time ever, the Doomsday Warrior saw tears well up in Chen's eyes. The martial arts master quickly wiped them away. Detroit stepped back and took a look at Rock and Rona and Lyons.
You all need a rest, man. You look like something a dog dragged in.
They went into the decontamination chambers and took off their clothes, undergoing the three-phase cleansing process of shower, vacuum, and ultraviolet rays, emerging cleaner than any of them had been for days. Lyons was taken off to be given temporary quarters, but Rona would not leave Rock's side. They went to her room, undamaged, and lay down on the bed, bone-tired, and slept side by side, their arms around one another for nearly 12 hours. Refreshed by their first good sleep in a long time, and by their early morning lovemaking, Rona and Rock ate breakfast in the makeshift Century City dining room, and then went to see Dr. Schechter, the chief scientist of the city, responsible for much of its advanced machinery and amenities, had been shot in the stomach by German troops near the very end of the battle for Forrester Valley. The last time Roxon had seen him, the elderly scientist had been bleeding profusely from a stomach wound. Now they found him remarkably cheerful as he sat up in his bed to greet the returning free fighters.
Roxon, good to see you.
You too, Dr. Schechter. I heard from Dr. Gray that...
Yes, they got me good. In fact, I think I'm going to put in for some sort of medal for heroism under fire. The bullet apparently didn't do its damage in my stomach, but rather when it went in. It severed my spinal cord, Roxon. They tell me I'll be confined to a wheelchair the rest of my life. For a younger man, I suppose, that would be a sentence of depression. But for me, a man near the end of my days anyway, it hardly seems to matter. Besides, I can still use my hands and my brain. The legs seem almost superfluous.
Oh, Dr. Schechter, it's good to see you in such good spirits.
Oh, mush. Well, while you two have been out playing around in the countryside, we've been busy putting our act together here. Rock, just so no tears come to those mismatched eyes, I want you to know that I've already begun designing power-driven legs. Hang a damned wheelchair. I don't see why an ambulatory servo mechanism can't be manufactured. In fact, maybe it's a good thing that this happened to me. From the ideas I'm already getting, we might be able to do wonders for our wounded men. Arm and leg injuries. I should have been shot years ago.
Well, legs or not, we need you. Every man and woman here is praying for your speedy recovery.
Spare me the histrionics. How's Rath doing as interim president of CC? I must say, I don't get along with the man. Better your near-mute friend, that monstrous fellow Archer, was running things as far as I'm concerned. At least he has a heart. A human one at that.
Rath's not that bad. Just a little on the hard-boiled side.
Both of them had had their disputes, sometimes quite vehement, with the intelligence and counter-espionage chief over the years. For Rath, in charge of all the city's security forces, wanted as much control as possible over the comings and goings of the inhabitants, and a say in all new military and scientific planning. While Rock and Schechter visualized an open democratic society, much like the old America. Otherwise, as far as both men were concerned, what was the point? What was being saved? But the checks and balances that the different political factions of the city had on one another assured that the underground society did in fact function in a highly democratic manner. Perhaps one of the freest societies that had ever existed.
Actually, he's doing a pretty good job, I have to admit that. He's already preparing a team to investigate the power outage from the thermal generators. Me and my boys, along with some of your techs, are going to go down there today. Rath dug up some of those suits your team created a few years ago. The heat-shielding bulky things, remember? So, with some luck, we should have the power on within 24 hours.
Ah, yes. Power. Yes, I'll need power, lots of it, to get going on my new schematics. There's much to do. Much to...
Slow down, big fella. You've got nothing else going on right now. We just want you to recover.
Yeah, I know. But just a couple more days and I'll be on my feet. But listen, do me a favor. On the way out, could you give a good karate kick or something to that Dr. Gray so he won't come in here and give me another one of those damned needles in my buttocks?
There was a tremendous amount to be done to get Century City back into even a semblance of its previous high-tech functioning. Early that evening, Rock, his team, and the top civilian military leaders of Century City were all gathered around the conference room table, trying to figure out just how to proceed from their present devastated state. Rath explained his main concerns as security director.
We have strong reasons to believe that the N-bomb attack on the city was purely accidental. We've been lucky for nearly a century down here. This time, we weren't. But my gut tells me the Reds know that they caused us damage. Now, every one of you keeps coming up to me and saying, your sector, your department of the city needs top priority. Now, as temporary leader of Century City, I'm here to tell you, there are just two immediate concerns. Getting the thermal generators back in working order, and getting our security and detection devices functioning again. If the Reds made a move against us now, we'd be defenseless. We might as well just throw in the towel. Nothing's working right now. Not our anti-aircraft batteries, not our radar and sonar early warning systems, not our booby traps around the city's entrances. And everything, I repeat, gentlemen, everything depends on getting that thermal generator functioning again.
He paused to see how his words were going over. Although the military leaders, Wooster, Fenton, and Crawford, looked a little skeptical, it was more out of habit than anything else. They were listening attentively.
Now, in order for Roxon and his team to go down into the caves and check the thermal units out, we're going to have to divert all our emergency power down there. Groan, please, let's all groan now and get it out of the way. But the fact is, it's going to be pitch black and extremely dangerous down there below Ice Mountain. Without lights or power going through the auxiliary cables, they'll never find the damn thing to get them started again.
Roxon listened to Rath's words with rapt attention. The man seemed to have risen above his previous hard-edged demeanor. Sometimes, it took a great crisis to bring out the best in a person, and with Willis still missing, Rath had stepped up. He had expected to find himself in vehement disagreement with the intel chief from his first sentence, but instead, he agreed with every word. It was logic, pure logic. Nothing could be put back in order without the subterranean power plants. The debate, as was not uncommon for the vociferously democratic ruling council, was loud and tense. But in the end, with Roxon putting his 2 cents behind Rath's plans, the proposal was voted on and passed. Now the future of CC rested on deeds, not words. And it was Rock and his men who would enter the steaming hell below to see if they had a prayer of setting things right again. Luckily, the storage area for the asbestos-lined heat suits had been in the part of the G14 area, dug out just the day before by the restoration crews. Roxon, Detroit, Archer, and Chen, along with 5 of the city's generator technicians, went into the large crate and picked out the least damage of the somewhat cumbersome silver-white suits. Their ultra-high temperature shielding of asbestos and Volcaron, a Schecter plastic alloy, could withstand heat of up to 2,000 degrees, but not for very long. They also grabbed some shielded oxygen tanks that could be strapped on the suit's back if the going got rough due to poisonous gases.
If we're real lucky, the brakes won't be down in the volcanic area, but near the underground waterfall, Lincoln Falls.
Yeah, that'd be nice, but come on, man. Do you really think it'll be that easy?
No. But you're right, Detroit. That would be nice.
Are you sure you don't want me coming along?
I'm afraid so, McCoughlin. We've only got one extra large, and Archer's the one to come with us.
Wait a second. Archer can't even read, much less fix a damn generator.
Archer's strong. Need Archer.
You're both right. McCoughlin, you're strong and could definitely help on the technical side, but Archer's a goddamn bulldozer. You've got to admit, you can't toss boulders around with the kind of ease Archer here can. And since I suspect most of the problem down there is rock slides, we're gonna need bulls, not finesse.
Okay. Okay, you bastards go and have your little fun without me. But I swear, if any one of you dies down there, I'm gonna kill him!
With some trepidation, the Rock team led 5 electrical technicians down the sloping green-lit tunnel. Rogers, the lead tech, had triple-checked all of the suits. All the men carted their suits and oxygen units in packs slung over their backs. The trip down to the deep caverns was going to be rigorous enough by itself. so Rock decided they wouldn't put them on until it was impossible to go on without them. Each man carried small arms, and Chen, his usual assortment of star knives, and God knew what all beneath his black jumpsuit. The extra weight was regrettable, but the Doomsday Warrior, like Wrath, had a certain clenched feeling in his guts, and he was a man who followed his feelings down to the wire. Once they reached the beginning of the smaller tunnel system under Ice Mountain, the debris got heavier until they hit a dead end.
What's the map say, Rock?
And there's a lot of passageways down here. Most of them were built over 100 years ago for the interstate, plus the 30 smaller shafts that have been dug during the exploratory building of the city.
So, which way do we go?
Well, usually crews just come through this main thoroughfare, but it's caved in. And a lot of these smaller paths are just crossed out, probably years before. So, to answer your question...
We have no idea.
Yep. I say we head down the largest path, which is... that way.
They started down what looked from the print to be the largest of the ancient tunnels, and made good time until after about a half mile, the damn thing just stopped, a solid granite wall blocking them.
Well, this map's just about worthless.
I saw a narrow passageway about 200 yards away.
No harm in checking it out.
This way didn't seem to have been affected by the atomic blast, and the team headed down at a slow descending angle. After 15 minutes, the temperature began rising. A good sign to Rock, as it meant they were drawing closer to the dormant volcano that powered the thermal units. The air grew thick, and sweat started covering their faces.
Mr. Roxon?
Yeah, Rogers?
I think we should put on our suits now. There's no telling what kind of gases the pits are giving out, and if there aren't any vents for the carbon monoxide, well...
You're right. Everybody, time to put on your suits.
The men took out the bulky suits, and with some difficulty in the narrow tunnel, put them on. They walked for another 5 minutes until they came to an intersection for 5 different passageways, all leading off in different directions.
Oh, great.
Jesus, Rock. A man could get lost down here for the next 1,000 years.
A little pre-planning is always a good idea. I brought some nylon line, only 1/100 of an inch thick, but we can unravel it and find our way back later. An old ninja trick.
Now why didn't I think of that?
Because you're not an inscrutable oriental.
Rock checked the blueprints again, and this time they did show the 5 intersecting tunnels, 2 of which appeared to lead to their destination. He looked down both, felt a certain tingling about the one to the right, and headed the men in that direction. As Chen attached the coil of nylon filament to his waist utility belt and let it unravel, the ceiling of the stone pathway grew lower and lower as they moved on, until the men were bending over to avoid bumping their heads. They walked on at a slow pace, careful not to rip their shielding suits on the sharp rock walls. Even the tiniest of tears could mean death, and the temperature gauges on their belts had already risen to 130 degrees. Rock relaxed when he dimly heard the bubbling volcanic roar of the pit ahead. A giant lava dome under Ice Mountain. At last they reached it, suddenly emerging from out of their cramped passage into a large cavern, its jagged ceiling nearly 100 feet high. And just ahead was the round top of the crater, from which clouds of steam rose through crevices to the surface, nearly 2 miles above. The team moved carefully ahead to the nearly 1,200-foot-wide pit, which glowed with an eerie reddish-orange light from the churning lava miles below. And above the pit, mounted all around it, were 20 immense electricity-producing heat generators. The heat-activated propellers sat above the rising steam clouds, just reaching out over the volcanic dome. The steam and the rising air turned the alloy blades with tremendous velocity, causing an electromagnetic generator, placed some 50 feet back from the edge of the dome, to turn out a constant, eternal source of power. There was so much power produced by the dry steam generators that only half could even be used. In fact, when everything was functioning, there was a surplus that was stored in lithium-ion batteries and used for powering mobile equipment. Only now, nothing was working. The generators were dead. The windmill-sized blades still as dead branches on a windless day. Rock hoped it wasn't the blades themselves, since they didn't have the equipment for that kind of work. The heat gauges on their suits went up nearly 10 degrees every foot they drew closer. 20 feet away, the meters read out 230 degrees. Even inside the suits, they were starting to sweat.
Rogers, what the hell could it be? All the blades stopping at once like that.
There's a safety mechanism built into them, electrically powered. Actually, what it does is send them a little zap of electrical power every 1/10 of a second. This allows the blades to continue rotating, but if the power stops even once, they'll come to an instant halt. It's a good idea, theoretically anyway.
So it's that safety that's out?
It gotta be. Either the computerized timer or the main cable that feeds into them. And that, I'm afraid, is all the way around the other side of this pit. It's easily accessible from the main tunnel, but from here...
There was a narrow walkway around the perimeter of the dome, designed and built years earlier when the heat output of the volcano was a third of its present volume. Roxanne looked at the stone steps leading to it through the rising clouds and gulped. It was going to be hot out there, but he didn't know how hot. Leading the way, the Doomsday Warrior stepped up onto the 3-foot-wide walk and started walking cautiously forward. It was like going into a steam bath on the sun. The heat gauges on their belts doubled within seconds as the rest of the repair expedition followed behind, their faces reddening inside their masks, their breath coming in short, quick bursts, even with the oxygen feed. They could see down through the curtains of steam to a burning glow far below, could feel the raw power of nature course through their bones. And it made them feel like ants, mere nothings compared to the sheer screaming energy that raged beneath their feet. Out of this, man had been born, and back into it he would someday go. Each prayed it wouldn't be today. The going was slow, as the years of rising moisture had deposited a layer of grease on the walk, making it as slippery as wet moss. And those who had reached out to grab hold of the iron railing that ran alongside the stone path pulled their hands back in pain as the superheated metal singed their thick work gloves. But after nearly an hour of slipping and sliding, they made it all the way around to the other side and down onto a flat rock plateau filled with heavy machinery and cables running off in every direction. Rogers immediately rushed over to the computerized safety timer and checked it. But after 20 minutes of testing various circuitries, he could find nothing wrong.
Roxanne, it's gotta be the main feed.
Yeah, you're right, Rogers. Check it out.
Ah, shit. It's been severed right in half.
The cable lay there on the rocky ground, thousands of wires poking out of its dismembered body. Rogers walked to the edge of the volcano and peered down. The other end lay on an outcropping about 30 feet below, with a large boulder resting on top of it.
Jesus Christ.
Wait. Can't we just cut off that section and reconnect the other part? It looks like it comes back up about 50 feet to the right.
No can do, Rock. The thing just reaches itself. No slack. And the electrical supply warehouse back in CC is under about 1 million tons of rock. Won't be dug out for weeks, maybe months. No, I'm afraid that we're gonna have to go down and get that baby.
The men of the rock squad and the technicians all stared down into the flaming hell with a sinking sensation in their stomachs.
First, let's try to pull the goddamn thing out. Archer.
Yeah?
Come here, give me a hand. Just hold on to it here.
Yeah?
And pull.
No good.
Nope. That boulder didn't even budge. Looks like we get to go down there. I'll go.
I can do it.
Thanks, guys. But I'm gonna have to pull rank and volunteer myself. And Archer here. His bulldozer abilities may come in handy down there.
And me. You're gonna have to handle that cable very carefully so as not to destroy the inner wiring if it isn't already crushed flat. You'll need direction. Ergo, I'm coming along for the ride.
Rogers went and dragged a portable collapsible Magna Steel ladder from a storage shed and lowered it over the side of the dome, attaching its upper support rungs to the iron handrail that ran around the perimeter of the crater.
I'll go first. Just make sure this thing doesn't fall over while I'm on it.
Rock slowly lowered himself step by rickety step. It was hot up top, but once he actually entered the path of the rising steam and heat, it was almost unbearable. He felt as if his body was going to explode, the blood and flesh bubbling right out of him. There was no way they could take more than a few minutes of this.
I'm down. Archer, you're next.
Roxanne made a little room for Archer's bulk. It was difficult, as the entire ledge was only about 3 yards long by a yard wide, including the boulder. Rogers was next, and the three of them could hardly fit. Rogers got down on his hands and knees and peered under the 2-ton boulder to see just what the damage was.
It's better than I'd hoped. The cable was neatly severed. Only about 6 inches of it's been destroyed. The boulder's pointed at the bottom, one edge resting right in a small hole. If we can push it straight out, I think we'll be all right.
Archer got around toward the back of the almost egg-shaped 7-foot-high boulder, while Rock and Rogers went to each side.
1, 2, 3. Not good enough. Push harder. 1, 2, 3. Roger!
Roxon saw Roger's hand slip and immediately swung his arm out.
I've got your glove, Rogers. Hang on.
But the work glove was only a heat shield and wasn't designed to hold a man's weight.
No! 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 Oh, God.
The image of Rogers splashing into the white-hot lava sea below came into his head, and he quickly pushed it away. There were a lot better ways a man could die.
That's it. We've got to do this now.
Archer feels sick.
I know. It's too damn hot. We've got to push this fucker off now, or it's over. Just think of that old cow you told me about. The one you used to carry around from meadow to meadow so it could graze.
Oh, understand. Boulder dead.
Right. You ready? 1, 2, 3. It's moving! Push! We're almost there!
Cable?
It looks okay. Okay, guys, pull it up.
Rock and Archer made their way back up the ladder, glad to be back on solid footing. The 300 degrees on the cavern floor seemed like a fall breeze compared to being inside the thing. The four remaining technicians quickly placed the two ends of the split cable together and began rewiring.
How's it look, Jenkins?
Looks like it'll be about an hour. Century City will have power by tonight.